Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Last Lap podcast, episode 39, apparently, Niren.
Allegedly, well, yes.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
We always guess before the show and we both got it wrong this time.
We've officially like reached the point now where we actually just don't know how many weeks we've been doing
We've been doing it for bits, mate. How you doing? new gaff, you're moving, ain't you?
Indeed, yeah.
Busy boy.
Moved flat, yeah. Boxes everywhere. I'm not the most organised man at this moment in time.
No.
I know that's very shocking for a lot of people right now. But it's all a bit crazy right now. But
well, I know someone who is organised.
Yes.
The man sitting across from me right now. Blake, welcome back.
I was like, who's there? I'm not very organised.
No, you said on WhatsApp earlier, you're like, you always arrive early.
Yeah, exactly.
You're one of those guys, which I like. Yeah. I like that.
And like until I'm not. But yeah, I was here an hour early. I got the notepad out. I ditched the laptop at home. Thinking about what's up for the rest of the season. But I feel pretty organized sometimes, and that's all completely destroyed by ADHD, so I gotta have a system to fight it.
I mean, as Max Verstappen's ex-performance engineer, being on time is quite important, right?
Yes, facts, yeah.
Now, if you don't turn up on time, then where's the performance, Blake? Because it all comes from you, right?
No, I let other people do that. I just outsource it.
Yeah. Even the performance this season is coming from you.
Yeah.
Being on time is coming from...
Obviously, having been ex-Red Bull, and I imagine you've still got a lot of contacts and, you know, friends who still work at the team, and and you're still within those kind of circles somewhat. What do your ex-colleagues make of what you do now, I guess?
I think a lot of them are actually really receptive to it because, you know, a lot of them will watch Formula One content, and a lot of them are, like, my engineering pals are technically minded, and there's, like, there's not really anything good engineering technical analysis. No. Every now and then I'll get a message from one of them like, how did you know that? I'm like, that was a good guess. I mean, I make it very clear. I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And when there's something I don't know, I make sure to make clear that it's a speculation. It's like, it could be this. Because how many times can you look at something that's happening in the Formula One world right now and say, oh, it's definitely the pull rods. It's definitely the push rod. It's definitely the anti-dive suspension. So it's like, a lot of that stuff has to be taken into context, and then you can kind of break it down and explain that. But I think a lot of them are like, why did you leave just before we started winning championships?
Or was that why you started winning championships?
Between myself and Engine Mode 11, I think when we both dipped out, the performance went through the roof. Yeah, exactly. No, that's a fair point. But
it's not a fair point.
No.
Don't beat yourself down like that. Look,
no, at the end it's super interesting being on the outside. And for me, right, never mind them saying, what do you think about it? It's really cool being able to enjoy the sport from a fan's perspective now and not knowing that you have most of the information. Because when you work at a team, you have 1/10 of the information. And then even then, stuff like tires and everything else, which we're getting some new tires in Silverstone.
Oh, yes. We are, aren't we?
So
we're getting some new Pirelli rubber.
Exactly, new construction. So stuff like that. We don't know. The teams don't know what it's going to do. Us, as jokers sitting here on the podcast, we don't know. And I guarantee you the level of uncertainty that Pirelli have approaching that is relatively high. Like, probably they've made a very safe bet. But it's a single tire supplier. They don't need to, you know, they don't need to risk go, it's like, right, let's get these a lot faster.
True.
Their goal is to not have failures.
Well, I guess Pirelli must work more collaboratively with the FIA and F1 versus when there was a tire war. Because it's in the best interest of...
Yeah.
So what are the changes that are being proposed to the tire? What's your understanding of what is going to change and why are things changing?
So reading in between the lines from what Mario's put out in the press release, it sounds like...
Mario is solo?
Solo, yeah. So the
Pirelli...
Pirelli Big Boss, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Pirelli Big Boss has obviously had a talk. So the Pirelli consume a lot of information from the teams in terms of loads, the tire cambers, toes, and temperatures. They get a lot of that information from the teams to help them monitor it. And the teams are the best place to calculate all those things and feed that back into them. Pirelli have probably gone away and said, you know what, you know, these load cases, let's say high speed corners, the inside wheel, the stress on the shoulder is a lot higher than we thought. We need to make a construction change so that we don't have failures from high stresses in those specific cases.
Okay.
So that's probably the kind of thing they're doing. And they're looking at Red Bull after last year, like, right, we're going to change the floor, lads. So the car is going to like lose a lot of lap time. That didn't happen.
That went well, didn't it?
That didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Because,
but it's one of those funny things. Like, you know, every year, there's a couple things that we can be confident in. Formula One cars will get faster for a given rule set, even with subtle tweaks. No matter what, all the engineers are super clever.
You're clever. Fuckers,
always find time. Every
single year. They're always finding time.
That's
so they've probably looked at their projections, put in a bit of padding for next year, and they're like, you know what? Some of those cars are getting pretty quick. And like, to be fair, in terms of cornering performance, like the Aston and Ferrari are very close to the Red Bull in single lap, which is one of the considerations. And the other one is, you know, long cycles of the whole life cycle of the tire, like a whole race distance. Are there fatigue issues with the casing or something like that? And I'm way out of my depths talking about that.
I think it says a lot though, right? Because from the data I've seen, lap time wise, the Red Bull is, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's about 0.5% between the Red Bull and the next quickest.
It depends.
Would you say around there?
It depends, yeah.
I think averaging across the whole season, what we've seen.
Yeah, sometimes the Ferrari is quite close in terms of single lap and that falls away during the
race. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like race pace wise, because 0.5% doesn't sound that much.
It's a lot.
What would 0.5% look like over the course of a race distance?
Let's say you got 1.5 laps, so 0.5% is... A lot.
Is that quick maths?
It doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot.
You know, but if,
it's like
if you
4 tenths, isn't it?
Yeah, if you add 0.5 second for 57 laps,
yeah,
you've got a really big performance gap.
That's 30 seconds, pretty much. Like, yeah, that's a whole pit.
A whole pit stop. Yeah,
literally. Exactly. Which is kind of what you see at the end of the race is either of the Red Bulls could box for new tires to set up fastest.
And I guess the thing is where the cars are so relatively close, like 0.5%. I mean, the gap, but like 0.5%, you go back to like the 90s, people talk about the glory eras. Like, people were finishing like 1.5 minutes ahead of
Well, people
P2.
Weren't even qualifying. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, you go to the Grand Prix and go, well, we might race, lads, we might not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You wouldn't even, like I know Matt and Tom did a pod with Esteban Ocon, and he was saying, like, you know, they were talking about potential for kind of standardizing F1 and making it a spec series somewhat, which I don't necessarily agree with, but. You know, Esteban was like, he thinks there's probably about 0.2 in terms of driver performance between the quickest and slowest on the field, which maybe 0.3, I think, between the quickest and slowest, maybe 4, but not much more than that. I think it's within a second, within 0.5 second, sorry.
Absolutely. I think you're probably looking at the driver skill gap within 0.5 second, but then you get like that conversation gets on to what is Formula One?
Yeah.
And I think it's manufacturers of chassis, yeah. Manufacturers of engines. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we only have a single tire supplier. But in the past, it was also manufacturers of tires. And that all of those things are your performance DNA. And then you add the driver on top of that. And the best one versus the slowest one on any given weekend could be, like you said, I think it's closer to 0.5 second from what I've seen.
Which, I mean, still, when you've got someone like Max Verstappen at the top and then you've got, you know, Logan Sargeant, Nick De Vries towards the bottom, like that's still, you know, that's still pretty.
They're all very
impressive.
Very very good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like
they're all world champions in some way, like Logan won karts, yeah, Nick won FE. Yeah. Like, I mean, but what do we think about the whole idea of spec series F1?
Well, no constructors, no sort of. I personally am not a fan, just from the perspective of you don't have any of those like underdog stories if you don't have like a level of like a ladder of performance,
yeah.
I think. So like stuff like Pierre Gasly winning in Italy, everyone just goes, oh yeah, Pierre Gasly won if it's a spec series because he's probably won races outside of that. Yeah. Even though like in Formula 2, you have your better and like worse teams, but if you're driving for the worst team, you're still going to get a podium that season.
Yeah, you've still got
probably
a shot.
Probably. Yeah. If you're a decent driver. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I think you just lose that element of magic when something unexpected happens, for me personally.
I get that. And I think that's a really interesting point, because we talk about lately what makes good racing, and we're talking about number of overtakes, nature of overtakes, but what we're not talking about is battles.
Mm.
You know, like that's it's an overtake, not overtake, fine. Forget the overtake. Mm. You want the battle. You don't want it to be done in one corner or one straight. You want it to be wheel to wheel for three or four corners in a row over two laps. Have a back off, have a go again. And I think if you had a spec series, you would have that. But like you said, you don't have... If uncertainty surprise is everywhere all the time, you can't have that story, like that underdog story.
That sport is story, isn't it? Through.
Yeah, exactly. And like the narratives like this season, like I know we're probably already bored of it. Aston Martin coming from absolutely back. How many times did you hear Sebastian Vettel in Q1 last year?
Oh, my God. It was always just P16. Every single Q1. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Ah, on theme radio.
And you see that happening. But now they've turned that car around, and Fernando's been on... the third step of the podium every race except for one so far,
and he was within a second of Charles.
It was Baku, wasn't
in Baku as well, so he could have been five P3s in a row.
This story, okay, maybe it's overshadowed by the fact that everybody's switched off because Red Bull are so quick out front, but that is a you don't have that in a spec series. It's like, oh, they were quick last year. It's like, oh, they just got a better driver. They've got all the same, and you don't have what happens to your Ferrari fan or your McLaren fan when you're all running a Dallara chassis or something like that. You know, it's like, what did you do? And it's not to diminish like in a spec series, because it's a whole different thing. I just think it's different. And if you want to see that, if anybody watched the Monaco Formula E race, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
I don't understand.
That track is perfect for Formula E.
I do not understand how that series gets so much disrespect. And the only thing people can come up with is they sound weird. They've got
they sound like kettles. That is literally it.
Yeah, that's it. But it's like they got rid of Fan Boost, which was so goofy. I hated Fan Boost. They got rid of that. And now it's like you have cars bumper to bumper, wheel to wheel, the entire Grand Prix around Monaco, a street circuit.
Monaco, Mexico is great as well for Formula E. I do still think Formula E, the track, I mean, London, the one at the XL, is awful. I'm sorry. I can't get on board with that race at Formula E. It's awful.
I enjoy going through it.
It's so bad. Like
it goes through the convention center.
Yeah, it's literally like it's bumper to bumper. And I don't know. It's not. But like Mexico and Monaco's got that. Again, it's got that charm. It's got
that charm. Imagine Monaco just went through the casino like during a Grand Prix.
Listen, look. I mean, Monaco have got raised their game. Now, Vegas is looking to take Monaco's crown. You know what I mean? It's been like the crown jewel of F1. So maybe.
Monaco's. Like, if we're going to really. Like, be honest here, Monaco's shit. Like, if we're being totally real,
I disagree.
If you want actual, like, I think a lot of fans now
come on
get into Formula One, they might have got it through Drive to Survive, whatever. They get into it through, right, cool. Your mate has told you this is sick. It's action all the time, probably. If you're hearing it from a casual friend.
Okay.
No, but I mean, you're not, if you're trying to get your
friend. This
friend's
somewhat misinformed.
If you're trying to get your mate into Formula One, you're not going to go, well, yeah.
I'm not going to sell him Monaco. I'm going to sell him like.
Yeah, but you never know that.
I'm going to sell him Silverstone or
Brazil, Silverstone.
Sao Paulo.
But that might be their first entrance point. They might start watching around about then because it's towards the start of a season.
They should just delay their taking.
Yeah, I suppose. But for me, I just like.
I think just Monaco's that track that like
procession, isn't it? Just, you know,
qualifying sick, but if you red flag the session, you should lose your lap time. Oh, no, Monaco could be fantastic. That's what I'm saying. It could be great. It needs its own format because it's such unique.
The cars are just too big though anyway.
Yeah, but if you mandate more pit stops and you do one shot qualifying so no one can ruin anyone else's qualifying, I think that makes it. And I wanted to get onto this actually, talking of, you know, because I bang on about one shot all the time, right? It's pretty boring by now, but I've seen Karun Chandhok been talking about this, and he's been talking about it for a long time. The idea of using every single compound on a weekend, so you essentially mandate a two-stop. So say you start on a hard, you have to use then the medium and the soft.
Yeah,
everyone has to do it. You're essentially mandating a two-stop. Break.
I had a look at this the other
day.
What
do you make of it?
I had a look. So I did some nerdy stuff. I opened up Python, and I wrote a strategy model. So I go look at all the pace.
I can't hang with this guy. This guy's too good.
But I looked at it.
What's a? It's a snake, bro.
I was gonna say, what even is a Python, bro?
It's a programming language you use. So there's MATLAB and Python. Those are pretty popular for data science.
Man, I'm not used to doing coding. Coded is like my worst nightmare. I love it with a passion.
So I was like, why don't I just write a strategy model so we can see what this stuff looks like? And I had a look at the mandatory two stop in Miami, for example. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like that solves the problem. If you take the exact same compounds that we have now, I don't think it makes any difference. Like, yes, the soft is pretty terrible in terms of degradation. As soon as you put it on, it just starts bleeding lap time and hemorrhaging lap time. So you would basically, you would have some variability in strategy, but I don't think it solves the problem. I think...
Well, when you say solves the problem, what do you think the problem is?
The problem that we've seen in the last couple of races, the first thing that most people perceive to be a problem is the fact that the Red Bull is super fast and the direction of the television really focuses on that. Like in Miami, we spent the entire race focusing on what if Max Verstappen, Sergio Perez, lap times, alternate strategies, when's the crossover, will they be able to take, how could... And you look at the midfield, and there was a chain of 8 cars stacked up, lots of exchanges.
There were some great battles. Yeah, Magnussen, man.
Magnussen went crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there was a lot of stuff. We got to see some of it, but the narrative was missing to talk about, like, P12 is going to stop, or they're going long and they're going to get the pit stop over this person. What about that story panning out? So that's one of the perceived problems. But looking at it, almost any car in the last 3 races can do a full race distance on a hard tire.
Yeah, Esteban did pretty much the whole race, didn't he? And that was longer than Alex had done in terms of kilometers covered.
Yes, exactly. So that's one of the biggest problems. The hardest tire, even when you're in Baku, you're on the softest set of the range. Mm. You can run an entire race on a single tire. So maybe they need to look in the medium term about their compound selection. Like next year, do we expect any big changes? Don't let people do a whole race on a hard tire, and then you don't have to mandate stuff like
that. Because we had that originally with, was it Sochi? Sochi first came onto the calendar, and it was like, yeah, you could literally do whatever you want during this race because there's no degradation at all.
Yeah, I don't remember that one at all. I can't remember what happened yesterday.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't know.
The fact that I recall that
is crazy because my memory is shocking.
The only thing I remember about Sochi is when in free practice 1 before the session, there was a truck that spilled diesel all over turn 8. No. And that corner was never the same ever again. First year, lots of grip. Next year...
Oil soaks in, right?
Yeah, it's like that corner was always, always slower for years after.
So what we're saying is we should put diesel on all of the corners.
No, that's just low grip.
You might have just inadvertently made everyone more catastrophic. Yeah,
exactly. Now then you end up with Miami last year where the tarmac's just peeling up. But I think if you had a mandatory 2-stop and you had to use all the compounds with these tires, you're still going to you'll have one more stop on most cars, but you're still going to be able. It's like, right, well, we can do everything on the hard tires. So you go soft, stop, hard as long as possible, stop. I feel like there's a lot more to think about that, and that brings to another interesting conversation with strategy, which is warmers, which there's been a whole fallout.
We've been talking about it for years.
Yeah, and the only thing I think. These things as ideas, like warmers or refueling, as an idea, are great. But what do you do with them? How many laps is the warm? Because when you get into the idea of racing without warmers, you have really interesting strategy scenarios that fall out in terms of, right, you put on a new tire. How many laps does it take for it to warm up?
Yeah.
A, how long does it last at its nominal performance life? And then how much does it drop off? And then when you have, say, 2-stop races around that, you have this situation where there's a car out on a new tire and there's a car out on an old tire that's degging off. So, you have these changes between warm-up and extreme levels of degradation.
Yeah.
Not extreme levels, just reasonable levels of degradation, unlike we've got with the hard. And you can have really interesting pit stop and crossover strategies, undercuts, overcuts.
When you've got a long tire warm-up, it's going to take, at least 2 laps to get up to temperature and you're mandating 2 stops. Then it does mean that, if you go early, then you might not have as much performance. Your time might be technically slower, but then you've got more confidence in the tires underneath you because they're up to temperature. Mm-hmm. Someone heads just pitted, but they're like skating on ice, and then you can put them under more pressure. I just feel like you know, when you look at the data and when you look at this idea of doing a mandate in a two-stop, is it difficult because you look at the way teams approach a known one-stop? We knew Miami was going to be a one-stop, like, yeah, as soon sure. as, you know, mm-hmm. we saw the practice running. Surely, if you know you're going to have to do two-stops, then that can somewhat change the strategic approach, I guess, to a race.
Yeah, I mean, you have another variable. It's like, you know, depending on, but you saw this in Miami as well, depending on where people started, you started people on a harder tie. For example, there's a huge question that was around Twitter because people didn't understand that. It's like, why did you give Max the preferred strategy? It's like, that's not what happened. The preferred strategy is start on the medium and go to the hard.
Yeah.
And how did Max catch him? He was just quick that
weekend. Just made it work.
Yeah. He got straight through traffic, didn't mess around. And the Red Bull has a huge pace advantage over all the cars.
Sergio didn't really drive off into the distance.
No, maybe you might say in hindsight that the medium at a high fuel load suffered more with degradation because the fuel load and stress through the tire was higher. And Checo did get into a bit of deg. But the other thing is, you're not starting a race from pole on a hard tire.
Well, the top eight all started on mediums, didn't
exactly,
they?
Exactly, exactly.
So it wasn't just Red Bull who came to that conclusion.
No, yeah. it was literally everybody. And I think 7 out of 10 teams alternated strategy between the drivers. McLaren started soft, I think. But
they did,
excluding them, that leaves 7 teams that alternated medium or hard start tire because there were so many people out of order from the qualifying.
Yeah.
This man.
Oh, McLaren, man. Oh, McLaren.
But to answer the question, I think you could say, whether you have warmers, whether you have refueling, anything like this, the thing that makes it interesting is a lack of predictability, the inability to do an entire race on a single tire, and managing reasonable levels of degradation around so that you have to run into some deg on a tire potentially sometimes. Not all the times, because then you end up with these weird 3-4 stops.
And this is why I just think the potential is there, clearly, because even, you know, with everyone doing a one stop and, like you say, all the issues with, you know, the tires not falling off and, you know, I thought Miami was a good race. Like, especially when I watched it back after, there were so many overtakes, so many good battles. It wasn't just, sure, there were some DRS overtakes, don't get me wrong.
But there's going to be.
It was deemed, like, for me, I gave it a 6 out of 10 and people were like, why are you being so generous? I'm like, what, are you mad? Like, that's at least a 6. It was a really good race.
When we did the live show, there was people in the chat that were like, when we asked basically what the rating was right towards the end, and there was people saying like 2 and 3, and I was like, lads, come on.
But did you?
It can't be worse than any of the other Grand Prix.
It's because if you don't have the battle at the front, and like even then, I mean, Checo put up a little bit of a fight to Max. He didn't just let him breeze on past. Yeah, but obviously the tyre advantage, we knew it was inevitable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you had the same thing with Lewis and George as well. It's like, your guys are on different strategies. Like, the whole point right now is to take points out of the constructor.
Yeah.
And like, I think Max and Checo knew the score there. It's like, but I mean, you guys did the watch along. I watched the race with my community as well. Mm. I had a blast watching that race and talking about everything. What's happening? What's going on?
There was stuff going on all the time. That's the thing.
Yeah, there wasn't even a dead period of like, even, I wouldn't even say there was like a 10 lap period where there was nothing.
No, because there typically is, isn't there? You get the crescendo.
You get middle of the race, you get obviously the start, whatever, and there's like maybe like a 20, 25 lap period.
I was never bored.
No.
I was never bored. And I really enjoyed it. And
maybe my expectations are just so low after the start of the season.
But do you think people wanted to dislike that Grand Prix? Because it gets a really, really bad rap. It's, please bring up the fake marina again. Nobody did this year. Fine.
Yeah, because it was actually still there. They did have water, but the fake marina was still there. I agree. I think part of it is because, I think Miami's a representation of a direction that F1's going in that a lot of people don't like. And I get it. I understand.
And I'm kind of on board with that as well.
Yeah. So, but I think, obviously, if you're going to look at the race in isolation, because also Red Bull, like, again, and I know it's like, it's not the what's happening, so it's ridiculous to say, but if Red Bull weren't doing what they're doing, it would be a super hyper competitive season. Like the rest, the other 9,
if my grandmother had the wheels, it would have been a bike.
I love that.
Couldn't put it better myself.
I love that,
Gino.
But it's fact. You're actually like right, to be fair.
But then if you get rid of Red Bull, several of the races, you'd be like, oh, that Aston Martin's way too fast.
And that's the thing.
We can never win.
And that's sometimes you just have to accept that, like, part of sport and part of what makes those, like you say, like Pierre Gasly winning, Ocon winning in the Alpine, Magnussen on the pole, like, is because these things don't happen very often. And I think Miami was a really good race. But also, I think, yeah, our expectations are maybe a bit skewed. What would you make of, you know, you say like Miami is a representation of the direction F1's going in and like more races. I know you obviously you're quite, no, I wouldn't say outspoken.
I am.
Do you think you're outspoken about not want? So what's your opinion on more races, Blake? Just to clarify to the audience.
I think the idea of having more races, there's all these like subjective things. Like,
I remember you tweeting something. It's like you said, told someone to go outside or something.
Yeah. So it's like, do you think the F1 calendar should have more races? If you think so, you need to go outside seek help.
Yeah.
Because like, let's be honest, 23, 24 races is a lot. And this is me not even talking from a personnel point of view. Like the people that work with teams, not just race engineers, mechanics, it's FOM, Formula One, all the, you know, agencies that support this, the news, the media. It's like 23, 24 races, and you're trying to cram all this, you know, there's the quality of stuff that we're talking about outside of it is relatively low.
Mm.
So often it's just like lots of like go, trying to get the first thing to talk about something. And it's like, maybe that's Formula One right now, but at the same time, it's just too much. Like there's, you know, when there's a race next weekend, I'm like, do I really want to watch free practice today?
Yeah.
I'm not going to enjoy it. I'll just turn it off because it's like in the sprint weekend in Baku. Mm. And I was kind of outspoken about this. I originally thought the sprint format was super cool. It needed to do some work, and the rules that they changed for Baku, you know, you have a separate qualifying for the sprint so that you don't basically unshuffle the field during the sprint race and go into the Grand Prix. But the whole weekend was just like, all right, practice. All right, now there's qualifying. Let's analyze qualifying. No, okay, we've got sprint qualifying. Mm-hmm. Let's analyze that. Let's analyze the sprint. Let's analyze the race. And it's like, that's not enjoyable for me. That's work. You know, like, that's not, like, it was so much. It wasn't fun.
Yeah. And do you think there's too much, Niren? Because obviously, you follow like football,
I'm
all the time.
Yeah. I mean, that is. I do hear it in a sense of like when I'm obviously scripting to make FTW and stuff. If it's a Champions League week, it's just too much. Like in terms of the work, yeah. That I need, the amount of games that I will, like I'll be totally honest, I won't be able to watch every game, yeah. Obviously. So
how many games like on a busy week? How many games are going on that you need to follow that you necessarily can't?
Oh, like if it's like quarterfinals of the Champions League, so there's still like 8 big teams left. You've got like a whole week of Premier League stuff. Obviously, we had the World Cup this year as well. So games were like condensed more together. So you'd maybe even have 2 Premier League games a week. You're talking like 9 or 10 games that like genuinely need to be talked about, like to some capacity, because otherwise people will go, why didn't you analyze that? Why didn't you talk about that? Yeah. Whatever. So I do agree. Obviously, though, from a fan perspective, there's not that level of analysing that needs to go on. Formula One isn't even necessarily a sport where you go to the pub and go, oh yeah, let's talk about what happened in the Formula One the other day.
Yeah, ultimately we have to design, like the best Formula One calendar is the one that works for the fans, not for us as content creators.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But I guess you need to get better at picking and choosing, like you have to do. You pick and choose the matches that you go into in detail.
Yeah, yeah.
What are the topics? What are the talking points? What do the audience want to hear about? But at the same time, it's just like when you have triple headers, it's, you know, that's 3 weekends in a row.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, if that's the case, if I'm doing content around Formula One, I should have just stayed at the track and I could have had a couple world championships on Max's car by now.
That's the thing. If you're a fan who loves the F1 and you want to take it all in, you know, it's asking, you know, most of your Friday, most of your Saturday, and a significant chunk of your Sunday. Mm. Like, and if it's 3 weekends in a row, like, I think that's where other sports, even though football, there's more games, it's easier to kind of dip in and out.
Yeah, you can. At the end of the day, it's an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, where you just sit down and go, right, cool, that's the game I want to watch. Yeah. There might be 2 back-to-back games that you want to watch, fine. But for the most part, you can't even watch games on a Saturday, legally.
Yeah, true. Because you're asking, what, 2 hours, and you can take in the full context. You don't have to watch, like, oh, like if you're watching like Arsenal like play, you're not watching training from earlier in the week. Yeah. You don't need that context. But it's like in F1, we're watching training. Yeah. You're watching.
It's weird.
And it's like if you just watch the race, like on the odd occasion, like when I would just watch the race and I've missed qualifying, I kind of feel out of the loop because you're like, well, okay, what did qualifying happen?
What are they doing there?
Like, yeah.
You could go back to Miami. If you showed up on Sunday,
you need to at least watch qualifying, if not practice.
Yeah, because everything's linked, isn't it? It
gives you context.
Yeah, that is true. If I've missed qualifying, I feel like I'm turning up here and I'm like, oh, God, guys, I'm not qualified to do this right now.
But is it too much? And I feel like Formula One fans, we're spoiled and maybe whining a bit that it's too much because, like, other sports, but fine. Mm. I think the, like, further to the point that you say, you need to consume so much of it. You need to watch training.
You need to
watch, you know, the pre-games in order to understand the context. Otherwise,
even if you want to talk about it with your mates. Like,
yeah, it's like...
you want to be educated on what you're saying. Again, you can consume a whole football match in a two-hour window.
Yeah, and that's all the context you need.
Yeah.
So...
but like, if you want to, that's where it's kind of, it's hard. I think it's difficult for us. And what's like, let us know in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. Like, do you think, because we do have such a unique perspective, like the three of us, we're in such a like unique position relative to the sports that we cover.
Because you need to have dialogues and drive conversations after you consume it. So you're always under that pressure. It's like more info. Like we talked before the show, people are like, I've already seen this video on, let's say, this topic. I want to know what you think.
I
want to know what you think about this. And you're like, oh, man. So I guess we're just going to have to be a lot more selective.
To be fair, what I will say is, though, I mean, I know we said like it might take up a decent chunk of your Friday, a decent chunk of your Saturday, and then whatever of your Sunday as well. If we're being totally honest, the average Formula One fan watches qualifying and the race.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's like, what, 2 hours on a Saturday, 2 hours on a Sunday?
Yeah.
Or and 3 hours, why maybe on they Sunday, want the sprint build up and stuff. And yeah. I think that's also something to add in there is like, for the most part, you are maybe dedicating like 5 hours to Formula One each weekend. Yeah. It's in the afternoon, so you might not even be doing like.
But that's why they're bringing the sprint in, because they want those fans who only watch Saturday, Sunday
to watch other things on Friday as well. Yeah, exactly.
And I guess that's why. Because the viewing figures have gone up on the sprint weekends.
And they also want people at the track to get more out of it. Because like I've talked about this a couple of times. I went to Austin. It was the first Grand Prix that I've attended last year as a fan. I'd been trackside for 6 years, done a year of running the car and testing, and simulator for several more years. I'd never been to a Formula One race as a fan.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it very much.
Do you think that's because of your experience, or do you think it just wasn't...
I think it has to.
Because I'd love to go to Austin. That's
right. Yeah, no. I enjoyed being in Austin. I enjoyed being at the track. But in terms of enjoying the race, it was difficult because there was no cell reception. I couldn't see timing. And that's what I wanted to see. I was like,
your programs,
yeah,
man.
But at the same time,
your programs to see every little detail.
You need, remember, was it Google Glass?
Oh, yeah. It's like, right.
You can see the little screen.
But at the same time, in qualifying, I had no idea what cars were on out laps, who was setting a time. I didn't know what the pace was. And it was just like, those are things that are important for me to enjoy. And the race was the same thing. It's like, I can't, there's the tower at the exit of the pit lane, which has the driver's numbers. Mm. But other than that, I can't hear the commentary. I don't know what's happened at turn 19. I can barely see the television. I don't have phone reception, so I can't see timing data to see the order. And it was just like, I had to get out of that and just be like, I'm going to enjoy the sounds of vroom, 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 and having a couple cold beers with my friends. But it was a different experience.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Friend of the channel, Cameron, F1, I think, I'm pretty sure it was him. He tweeted recently, is going to a Grand Prix overrated?
He did. I remember that.
And I kind of know what he means. It's your expectation, right? So I went to Miami last year, and I was, when I'm watching qualifying, like you said, I had like, no idea, because it was just some really loud American on the megaphone, much more annoying accent than yours. And yes. I could barely hear. It was like the bass was like going through my skull. But just seeing the car, they were going through the S's. What corners are they? Like 4, 5, that kind of the quick S's where Charles dropped it.
Yeah.
Seeing F1 cars at like low fuel, full tilt through that section, just seeing it, taking that in, the sound, it was unbelievable. You can't believe, it just looked ridiculous.
You don't get that same feeling of speed when you watch it on the TV at home.
No, right? you can't possibly. And that's what you get from going to a race. This is why I always say, if I'm going to go to Grand Prix, I'll go Friday, Saturday, and I'll watch it on the last lap live on Sunday. That's why.
You watch yourself?
I have a little screen here just so I can just click out, see how good I look. That's how I would... that's my ideal for taking in a weekend. Because, like you say, you can't follow it. If you're expecting to go to a Grand Prix and understand like as much as possible about what's happened, don't go to the Grand Prix because you won't.
Yeah. But I think that's a really good thing. Like, you get... And I did get a much better appreciation of a lot of stuff that you can't see on the television. For example, the hairpin in Austin, was it turn 11? you see different lines, you hear the way that they break, the sounds the engines make on the overrun and the acceleration, the different sounds, all the different manufacturers, even different chassis, different teams with the same engine sounded different. And that was super cool. Watching how late they can break up the hill into turn one, staggering. And you can't appreciate that from the onboards or offboards on television. And that was awesome. But the idea of like once qualifying or the race is around, A, qualifying the race is so packed. I didn't have grandstands. I was general admission, so I could roam around. But then I was missing all the context, which is what I wanted to understand about the race. But being able to see the cars and a lot of that stuff, and you gain a much better appreciation.
Yeah, I think compared to football, it's more of a trade-off with F1.
Yep.
Like you're going for the atmosphere, and you're going for the smell and seeing the cars on track.
Facts.
And maybe seeing the drivers doing the parade.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's hard to really follow what's going on. A football match, you're almost, if you're sat at the side, you're almost getting the same view that you get watching it on telly.
You might even get more.
Yeah.
You might even be like, yeah. So that's interesting, actually. Yeah, I've never really, because it is true. Like I always fucking bang on about it. But like 2021 Abu Dhabi, we were there for that and didn't actually realise what was going on in terms of the safety car procedure because we couldn't see. There was a screen like no way over there in the distance, and we could see what was going on. Yeah, neither did they. The little sort of notification at the bottom to say FIA race control, whatever, you can't read that that far away. So we, like, for the entire time whilst that last lap battle was happening, had no idea of the context of the fact that basically the FIA had shafted it in terms of like not letting all the laps cars through. We were just like, oh yeah, they've done their job, whatever. Boom, this is amazing. Last lap sprint.
But even in terms of terms of the nuance of that, though, I don't think you appreciated that on television until after, and they dissected it. It's like, well, here's how the safety car procedure is supposed to work.
True.
Dialogues that happen. Mm. People watching at home were completely. I was just like, I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea that it was going to be such a fallout from it.
I went to Silverstone 21 when Max and Lewis had their massive accident, and you see this screen at a distance, and it's. Yeah, it's having watched it back after, I was like, part of me felt like I missed out not watching it on telly, I'll be honest. Because that moment, that Verstappen-Hamilton crash was such a iconic part of that season.
Yeah.
And that was like almost the crescendo.
Did a lot happen between them that season?
It'll be forgotten.
Just every other race.
Yeah, literally. But, it was crazy, wasn't it? Run, like every other race was like some mad accident.
I guess you can't have it both ways.
No.
You can't watch it on telly and watch it. But I'm just saying that, you know, there's loads of reasons to go to an F1 race. But, you know, I think just expectations should be a certain way. But at the end of the day, these are 20 of the best drivers putting their lives on the line to do what they do. We also do need to talk a little bit about Nyck de Vries. Who's been a little bit in the rumour mill recently. Apparently, I did read it on F1 Insider this morning.
Spoken a lot about football.
We diverged there, but it's all relative.
No, but I mean, this is the link here as well.
Yeah.
He's got himself a yellow card.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even clock that. Yeah, he's got himself a yellow, not a red.
Yeah, not a red. Otherwise, he'd be out of there.
But apparently after
interesting,
five races,
already, that's an early yellow.
But you've got eight more until the summer break as well.
Today, I believe, is anniversary of 2016 Barcelona, an instance of another red card.
Well, yes, it was applied.
Quickly tell everyone, because you were very connected to
the
story.
Do we talk about this
you?
Every time I'm here?
but it's such a good story.
No, but like, so this is important because this is really relevant for the Red Bull situation. The fact that the way that they run the junior program, they can be like, right, you know what, you're out. So it was after Russia. Daniil had a terrible race, smashed into Seb a couple times, put him in the barriers. Coming off the back of China, where it was either P3 in China.
Yeah.
Good start to the season. A terrible race in Russia. We come back to the factory, and my boss is like, you got a new driver. He'll be here tomorrow for a simulator session. And we're like, is there anything to say about this? Like, no, it's done. So, you know, Max was pulled out of...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Also, they swapped him and Danny from that point on for the rest of the season, and that was the red card for Danny for whatever reason. Yeah. They put
straight
Max,
red as well.
Yeah, exactly, straight red. Put Max in the car.
And considering he'd beaten Ricardo the season prior as
well. Yes, exactly.
Like outscored Ricardo.
Yeah, exactly.
and then what, four races in, Russia was round four, Spain was round five.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then Max was driving the car, and that was, obviously, I think today is the day, was it, how many years ago was that?
Yeah, it was 2016, wasn't
seven.
It?
So. 7 years ago.
Jesus,
won his
man.
First.
Oh, man, I'm so old. No,
how was this man working in F1 7 years ago? Why weren't you at primary school? I can't believe how young you still look.
I was 30.
He was my age 7 years ago. That's ludicrous.
But that's how it works. So, that, you know, Helmets gave the red card. He said, we're going to swap it. Yeah. And, we might be looking
at that decision, obviously, long term.
So, are you saying put De Vries in the Red Bull, by the way?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the.
Is that not what we should do?
When you get the red card, when you're in the sister team, you go to the gulag.
That's it.
Yeah. Not fight your way out of there, man.
One v one.
Back to F2.
1v1 me on F2, bro.
Well, look, because I think.
You can't go back to F2,
right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you can't.
Oh yeah, true. Mad. Can't go back. That's very true. Interesting rule, that one. So
it's a wrap.
Five races in, yellow card already. We've got 13 total until the mid-season break.
Do you think it's justified, by the way? Already, I know how Red Bull operate, and I know they're sort of very cutthroat.
How many clean races he had? We had Australia. Was he not responsible for a gearbox inspection on the race restart at the end of the race? Did I miss him?
He got hit, didn't he, by Josh Sargent?
Sorry, Sargent.
I always do.
Sargent. Okay, so that was
not the Norwich footballer.
He did some bowling in Miami.
He did do that, yeah.
And he's just he did.
Baku was very very unclean.
Yeah, it's just. Yeah, I think it's so cutthroat, man. And like you said, like we said before this, you've all these guys within maybe a half a second of each other, and they are some of the best. But
the thing is, right,
there's so many scenarios though,
and you can't look at Nick in the same way you look at Logan, for example, because it's just like, it's not, if you want to look at a driver who's, well, I think Nick's 7 years older than Logan, and you know, he's tested loads of F1 machinery, he's been around, he's done different series, like he's a well-traveled racing driver.
Yeah.
You can be a motorsport racing driver without being an F1 driver. Like, there's a lot more to motorsport than just F1.
And he's done a lot. He's done Formula E, got that one, won Formula 2. And I don't even know what else he's done. He's done a lot of stuff. He's done well at that. But it's just getting into the Formula 1 car. Let's be fair. The Toro Rosso this year, or the AlphaTauri, is not a good car this year. It's on the struggle.
It isn't, but Yuki Tsunoda's dragging it to 10th and 11th.
He's averaged P10.6, and Nick has averaged P16.2.
Well, he hasn't finished below 11th, has he, Tsunoda, this season?
No. Excluding the sprint race.
This is Yuki's third season, and we said at the start of the season that if Yuki wasn't beating Nick De Vries, then it would be a wrap for him. He's getting the red card, but it's a big, big
but
difference
not only
at the moment.
Not only is Yuki beating him, Yuki is driving well. He's driving very well.
Very well,
yeah.
In a car that's probably relatively low performance.
That move around the outside at Miami at the start.
Mate.
Disgusting.
So good. And I think that's obviously exposing, you know, Nick's shortcomings even more because Yuki's doing so well. I don't think it's just Nick doing badly. Mm. I just think that expectations were rightly higher, I think. Internally at Red Bull. I'm not even talking about from a fan point of view.
Look at Monza last year.
He did the job. Like,
yeah, he got in out of nowhere. You start to ask the question, is he an adaptable driver? And at that time, the answer said yes. Mm-hmm. And then now...
The thing is, right, at the time, after that race at Monza, where he put it P9 in the end, I think it was,
yeah,
in the Williams. You know, you look at that, and then all of a sudden, all the, you know, I was saying the same. You know, you look at Nyck de Vries' career, he won F2, and you look at everything that's happened with a positive spin, because he's just come off a really positive result.
Yeah.
Yep. Now that he's struggling, you look back at, oh, well, the F2 group wasn't that strong that year. He got really lucky in Formula E.
Latifi.
Like,
Kellerman.
You know what I mean? And I think we're all guilty of that to an extent. Yep. You kind of...
You're only as good as your last race kind of thing.
Yeah.
Facts.
And it's just, I was expecting more from De Vries. I'm sure Red Bull were expecting more from De Vries. I mean, they were... Yeah, was it beforehand?
I mean, they fast-tracked him over at the vast amount of Red Bull juniors they had.
Yeah.
Lawson.
Yeah.
Didn't Helmut say pre-season? I'm sure he was quoted saying that he expects De Vries to be the team leader. Now, I don't know if that's to get in Yuki's... That was to get in Yuki's head, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, understandably, he's, like, 3 years older than Charles Leclerc. So, like, he's a well-versed driver.
Yeah.
That the expectation should be high. But what I'm saying is, if things carry on the way they do, I think, absolutely, mid-season, Red Bull should swap him out. Because their expectations, if it was a rookie that's coming in super green, like your jumper, straight in.
Yeah, like
if it was like, yeah, maybe that is harsh. But Nyck de Vries is a multiple championship winner, and he's being like thoroughly beaten. Like that gap between him and Yuki's, in terms of like race performances, is arguably the biggest out of the entire grid. So I think, why would Red Bull keep hold of him?
Well, here's a perfect way to put that in context. What do they have to lose in the AlphaTauri? Their average finish for Yuki, what, 10.6, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not in the points. So if you have another driver who's not in the points, is it time to get Lawson in? It's like, you know what? The car's not excellent this year. We've made some changes. We've made some technical changes, leadership changes for next year. This is a burner year. You know what? Nyck, it's not worked out so far.
Yeah.
Lawson, welcome back from Japan, from driving Super Formula. Would you like to practice in a piece of Formula One machinery until maybe we can sort it out for next year?
Yeah. Give them a trial almost.
What are they losing? Nothing. If they're not consistently scoring points, they're going to be scrapping for a couple of lucky DNFs.
Ninth in the championship anyway.
We got an
8th,
a 9th, a 7th, luck into a P5 on a wacky race with attrition. But they don't really have anything to lose. And if their goal in the long run is to find who's going to replace Verstappen, who's going to replace Perez, when their time comes at the big team, De Vries is not that person, I don't think.
I think that's what they were hoping for.
Maybe we overlooked them.
Yeah.
I think they were like, give him a shot. Maybe then,
he could be the number two to Verstappen.
Yeah,
you know, very calm, sort of like if Sergio moves on, just sort of like, right.
Because he's good 5 years younger than Sergio, I think.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But I mean, you say Liam Lawson. So again, F2 did well, beat Alex in DTM, doing very well in Super Formula at the moment.
He's an adaptable driver, to be fair.
Exactly. He's proven himself in multiple disciplines. What other names do you think, if Red Bull were to consider swapping De Vries out, what other names? Because there's a lot.
Is there an elephant in the room as well?
Yeah, why, sir?
Cool. Well,
no. He's already driven for them once.
Kvyat.
No. And he's already driven for Red Bull once.
Go on. Say the name.
But people keep talking about Ricciardo. Is he going to come back? And that's been all over the places. Would they bring Daniel back, and would it make any sense? And I think that question depends on what's their intentions for Daniel in the long run.
Yeah. Completely, right? Because with Lawson, it gives them an opportunity to test him out, give him half a season. That would be, what, 10 races?
Yeah.
To see what he's like. With Daniel, I think Daniel should be pushing for that, because I think he should be pushing for a seat to prove that his stock... Put his stock back on the upward, I guess.
But
that's what I'm saying.
If you put him in the AlphaTauri, then you have a relatively known quantity. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if he destroys Yuki, maybe Yuki's not the future, and Daniel made a mistake leaving. He could have been rocking and rolling at Red Bull still.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we can't tell.
Maybe Red Bull... I guess there is something that Red Bull can get out of Daniel getting in that seat. I hadn't actually thought about that. If he was, how would he perform relative to Yuki?
Yeah.
Because Daniel, you know, was at Toro Rosso. He's got experience at that team. I know it's a long time ago now, but, you know, that team knows how to set up a car for him to perform, or at least that organisation knows how to get the best out of Daniel that McLaren didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you were in charge and you had to pick between Lawson and Ricciardo or someone else,
yeah,
are you mid-season...
So you're role playing as Helmet Marko.
Yeah. My dream.
Finally, I've achieved.
Finally managed
greatness.
I'm an 80-year-old man. Yes.
You are.
Who would you pick? Who would you pick? If you had to
go on.
Shut up.
Oh my god.
He's older than me. Right? If you had to pick between the two, go on. I want you to pick, or someone else, or chuck another name in.
Iwasa super. No, let him win F2.
You could chuck him in.
Imagine getting called up from F2 early. It's like, all right, lad, you haven't got the dub yet, but
yeah,
you've got the dub.
I mean, I love you. Don't get me wrong. I love you, but I think it's a bit soon. Yeah, a bit early for him.
And they do have a history of pulling guys up quite early, or even promoting them quite early to the Red Bull. And
true,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, you're not as good as we thought you were. It's like, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Funnily enough,
he's 12, bro. He's just finished doing. Yeah, exactly. He just finished doing go karting. I would probably, just so you can seek out every single possible avenue at once. We already know what Daniel Ricciardo is. We already know how good he is. And we already know, realistically, he would probably beat Yuki Tsunoda, you would imagine, like during an overall season. I love Yuki, but I think Daniel's problem, realistically, was just not getting along with that McLaren. We saw him at Renault. We saw him at Red Bull. Like, he's an elite driver, if not dropped down a little bit. But that still beats Yuki for me. We know what he is. It's fine. Slap Liam Lawson in the car for like the last 10 laps. That's 10 races of the season, yeah?
Pit stop for driver change, mate.
Slap him in for 10 races, see how he does. If he does exceptionally, give him the seat next season. If not, then you know you've got Daniel Ricciardo there if he's interested in it.
Because if they were to put Daniel in for the second half of this season, he would do 10 races at that team, and then I don't think he would race for AlphaTauri in 2024.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd want that. But it gives a chance for him to put himself in the shop window. It gives a chance for Red Bull to look at him relative to Yuki to see if Yuki is the real deal. And then, like Daniel said, he's not interested in a seat if it's not. But
it's
for
not
him
like
to
Red Bull.
For him to get a top seat, he needs to like come back in and prove that he is still that driver.
Yeah, because
we all believe
be
that he is.
Because I'm going to be honest, he ain't. He's not for me. Unless Red Bull go, yeah, well, we're bored of Sergio Perez or something, he's not going to get that.
Sergio stepped up, yeah.
He stepped up this season. He's actually been better this season. I know Miami was like maybe a little bit of a down point, but you're against Max Verstappen at the end of the day. Daniel Ricciardo is not going to get an elite seat without going somewhere else first. Because why, like, if you're Ferrari, if you're Mercedes, if you're anyone, why would you go, all right, let's just go grab that guy that got slapped by Lando?
But if he jumps into the AlphaTauri for the set and then just does an unreal job,
reminds everyone of how good he is,
then maybe.
Yeah, and if he doesn't, he keeps doing what he's doing this season.
Yeah, man.
Like, he's still getting paid by McLaren, is he not?
Well, yes, 80 mil apparently. That was the payoff. Which
I would have taken that
if I
had a crystal ball and I was him and I could see this year. I would take the bag every day.
Yeah.
Than driving that thing around, yeah. Unfortunately.
To be fair, 80
crazy,
million.
Man. He got the bag and he's just
living
he
life.
Must be, he might be the highest paid TikToker in the world.
Mate.
You figure that, like, I think it's 12 million per position. It's 12 million per constructor's position.
Right. Yeah.
So actually, if, like, because Piastri has been closer to Daniel, I proved it in my most recent video.
Yeah.
The qualifying gap, anyway, is like less than 0.2 between him and Lando.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you look at how competitive it is in that lower midfield. Well, just the rest, basically, after the top four. You know, Piastri picking up a few points here and there could mean the difference between finishing, yeah, like P9 and P6.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I think that decision was somewhat vindicated.
Justified, yeah.
But again, I believe the driver's there. That talent doesn't... I mean, because you didn't work so much with Daniel, right?
No, I was on the other car. But, like, you know, after that, I'd be in the simulator. And, like, you can't really tell a whole lot about the driver's performance level in the sim. Mm. You can tell how quick they are, how adaptable they are, but that's not really the point of the simulator. But there wasn't that big of a gap between him and Max. Max, in qualifying, did get an edge on him eventually.
Yep.
But it's not like Daniel was falling off.
No, not at all.
Not washed.
No, not at all. So,
no, not showered.
Yeah.
And you look at Renault, it, like, the thing is that at Renault, it was so good as well. But
yeah,
I think there's, unfortunately, I think most drivers would, if you gave every driver a go in all 10 cars, you know, most drivers wouldn't be able to reach the peak. I think there's certain drivers who can just jump into anything and be quick, whether it's a slow car. This is where I always...
Yeah. This is where I hold Fernando Alonso in my highest regard because of his ability to every single car he's driven, shitter, winner, doesn't matter.
Adaptability.
Yeah. Minardi, Renault, good Renault, shit extra, Renault.
Yeah, yeah, shit like, Renault.
All the versions, like he's always achieved like really close to the ceiling of that car. Yeah. Unfortunately, that can't be said for most drivers. And I think, you know, Ricciardo, we've seen that with McLaren. I think we saw that with Vettel at times as well at Ferrari. And when the regulations first changed at Red Bull and Daniel came in and outperformed in there. And I just think that that's not, I don't think it's necessarily an abnormal thing. I think we've just been conditioned to see some drivers who just, you know, Lewis has won, like he's drove some shit McLarens in his time.
Yeah,
he still managed to win every year. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think maybe that's just set our expectations really high.
Yeah, facts.
Of these drivers. So that when Ricciardo struggles in a McLaren, it's like, oh, we fell off. Well, no, it's just sometimes a car doesn't fit your style.
Yeah. So, putting a number on that and describing it is super difficult because it's like you spend a lot of time trying to figure out, it's like, how do we make this car better for this driver because this driver doesn't like that kind of thing. It's like, well, when you fix that problem, it makes the car go slower for you to be more comfortable.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that was that a big part of your job as performance engineer to kind of understand, you know, say you've just had a practice session and you're comparing data between your driver and the driver at the other side of the garage. Like, how is it a way up of compromising maximum potential performance with driver comfort, I guess?
Absolutely. And it's one of those things, like sometimes you don't know, like there's certain setup changes that have no intrinsic lap time value to them. Right? Mm. But do they make the car easier to drive and extract performance and confidence so that you can continually, you know, turn in here super sharply and know that the car is not going to snap out, or you know that you can consistently break at the 75 meter board and you're not going to have a front lockup. You know, you might have, you know, 2% less peak deceleration, but the fact that you can always smash the brakes at the 75 meter board and always get that turn in the exact same spot without pushing on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That breeds lap time. You don't have to think about it. You're not like, oh, if I break a bit. It's like, nope, automatic, right? Smash the pedal, turn in, go.
Maybe these drivers are just too good.
They are too good.
Like literally, right? Baku, the
it's
amount
time
of times.
To start a dialogue.
The amount of times.
You make them worse.
These Belens were getting so close to that bloody wall at the penultimate corner, whatever one it is.
Yeah.
Like, so many. Like, Max, Checo, Esteban. Like, they're just the ones I remember off the top of my head. All, like, grazed that wall.
Yeah.
Like, they literally touched it. There was less than a millimetre in it. They touched the wall, and they were fine. They just carried on.
But the thing is, the cars are different every lap. The wind is different every lap. The tyres' grip is changing. The amount of, you know, how much front end or the balance of the car is changing every single lap.
And you're still...
And lap on lap, they're leaving enough margin so that if they have that little bit of moment at the mid-corner, they're just going to touch the wall. They're not going to be inside of the wall.
But you know what as well? We miss him.
What?
Because sometimes... It just needed a Latifi in
fact,
just to tap the wall.
It
you
is
know,
genuinely
just,
crazy.
Floyd.
How many races were improved the spectacle by Latifi crashing?
Honestly, I said it at the time. Like, I think I said this last season. I tweeted this.
Uncomfortable
like,
truth.
I'm convinced that Latifi is like a paid actor by the FIA. And they would just get on the phone and go, Nick... It's a 2 hours.
It's like, why is that light flashing on his dash? It's like, oh, that means I need to do the thing. but like, that being said, like, that was why Baku was crap this year.
Yeah.
It was effective. You could do a no stopper on it as hard. And the only safety car that happened was at the pit window anyway.
Yeah.
It was a one stop session.
Almost a zero stop, low key.
Exactly. So that's the kind of thing.
And we had, what was it? One of the races this year, everyone finished. Which has only happened like 13, 14 times in the history of the sport.
In history, yeah. It happened like the first time
it was
like
Miami.
10 years ago.
No?
Was it Miami?
Miami?
Yeah, I think it might have been Miami. And also, it was a really good race with like, loads of wheel-to-wheel
races.
That's
true, actually. Yeah, no one retired from that car. I'm very mad.
And that does not happen. But like, it does more and more now because the cars get more reliable. But also, the drivers get more reliable. And that's what I mean. Like, as the cars get more reliable, you're less reliant on like technical issues with the car to create some drama, like an engine blowing up. Ooh, safety car, like blah, blah. Like, but also, the drivers...
Ferrari got this.
Okay,
don't worry.
Okay,
just wait.
Okay, sorry.
That's true.
That's true. Well, they already did with Leclerc, didn't they?
You know what I've just realised? Obviously, we've got Imola next. Is that the closest Grand Prix to a home one for AlphaTauri?
Yes.
They could just negate this whole Nick DeVries argument. Just slap a random Italian in there to celebrate.
Well, I think they've got big
Italy
upgrades.
Livery.
Yeah.
Italy Red Bull livery.
I think Mercedes have got upgrade coming and Ferrari, I think, as well. What are your expectations for Imola, Blake? Preview for this.
I've got to be honest with you. Imola came about. So I do not remember watching any Imola Grand Prix prior to when I started working Formula One.
Oh, yeah, because it wasn't on the calendar when you were in the sport.
It came off the calendar in like 06.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I probably started watching Formula One around 2007, right? So that was that. Then Imola came back on the calendar in 2020 during COVID.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I have no recollection of anything that's happened at Imola Grand Prix since in the modern ones.
When George
Russell and Valtteri. Valtteri, that was huge.
And when George Binder behind the safety car.
That entire Grand Prix was actually mental, by the way. The one where Bottas and Russell together, because Lewis went off as well.
Yes.
I need to go back and rewatch those just so I'm in the loop, because that's one of those things. Like, I was at that point where in simulator performance engineering world, you know, like, I don't need to watch the races.
No.
And at that point, in the middle of those seasons with the back-to-backs and the COVID restrictions in the factory, it was not much fun. So I was just kind of checked out at that point. But I still can do my job really well without knowing that, because it's like Friday race support. What's happening?
Well, your job wasn't to enjoy the racing, was it?
I didn't get a bonus on
if
that.
If only.
People keep talking about upgrades. I mean, we intro'd into this with the upgrades.
Mm. Everyone upgrade.
When's the last time we saw an upgrade bring a noticeable performance game on a single event?
Mm.
I don't remember seeing it in years. In years, we've never seen a magic front wing, a magic beam wing, a magic diffuser.
No, to be fair, no, the new McLaren upgrades, to be fair, because they've made them worse.
We've seen that. Ferrari brought some downgrades last year after for Belgium. Now, yes, so what we did is we brought this upgrade that makes both the front and rear tires overheat at the same rate.
Yeah,
so it's not
just
the rears now.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that's what's really difficult for fans to really understand, because, say, McLaren bring their upgrades, but then, you know, they weren't performing. But then but maybe they just weren't performing at this track, because, you know, certain upgrades are kind of have a bigger effect at a Baku versus an Imola.
Yep.
So, like, it must be, I imagine, from a team point of view, you know, so say, you know, back when you were at Red Bull or Force India, like, you bought an upgrade. Would you, say you bought an upgrade that actually, you bought it for Baku, but it was actually really designed for like an Imola style track. Would you know that? Would you kind of?
Yeah.
Would you get much value from running that upgrade in Baku still, even though it's not really designed for that type of track?
It depends on what it was. And a lot of times you'd bring an upgrade and you would just be seeing, does it do what we expected it to do in the wind tunnel?
Mm.
And if the answer is yes, and it's not applicable to Baku, for example, you'd say, well, the part does what we said it should do. So this isn't an optimal part for this race. We'll put it back in the garage, we'll roll it out then, but you tick that off and you say, right, that did what it
did. That's what they mean by correlation, right?
Exactly. So it's like, what did this wind tunnel, the CFD say that this thing would do? And if you put it on track, because every time the track is the truth, it's the same thing that happened with Mercedes last year. Yeah. You know, all the tools and simulations said this will work, and then on the track, something creeps up and it doesn't work there.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, it didn't work anywhere for the most part. Now they're chipping away at fixing that. But the idea of correlation, and that's important, but these upgrades might only bring tiny, tiny, subtle, actually imperceivable improvements in lap time.
Yeah.
And track testing components is absurdly difficult, especially when you're dealing with, let's say, a couple points of like load on the car. If it's anything less than like 20 points, it's really difficult to pull that out of the data, because the track's changing, the tires are changing.
Yeah,
you never have.
And you've got
your back
same,
to back.
Yeah,
back
and you've back got back. An imperfect human being behind the wheel as well.
They're already too good, but they're not good enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so a lot of that will be like,
yeah.
So let's say you bring a new component to the car, you've got a couple checks. A, does it do what you said? You know, you've got pressure taps all over the car and you can see the pressure signatures of the rear wing or the floor or this thing.
Yeah.
Like, does everything say that it did what it should? Is it better or worse anywhere? How does that change what you do about it? And then B, does the driver notice anything with it?
Mm.
And a lot of times you can sanitize it. Oh, the driver thought it was too understeer because it added more rear balance than we thought. We can correct that with front wing. You know, those are the kind of loops you can go through to say, this will be better. This is fine. Mm. Maybe you try it again. But so it's, does it match? What does the driver think of it? And then does the data say it's going to be better?
It must be a bit of a battle sometimes, because you're the engineer, the driver's the driver, and ultimately, you've got the numbers, you've got the data.
But they've got the feeling almost of like...
Yeah, exactly.
And that goes back to the performance versus competence conversation earlier. It's like, you know, does that thing add performance where it needs to be? If not, can you rebalance it and so that you end up with a net positive? Or does it make characteristics the driver doesn't like? And I think a lot of the things we see now are not about like absolute load, but about characteristics, like how much downforce do you lose with pitch? You know, do you lose a lot of load when the car goes super low, too low? Do you lose a lot of load when the car has excessive yaw through a corner? And what about wind?
Yeah.
Is your car really susceptible to gusts of wind so that it loses load very abruptly in places you don't want it to? And that makes a really crap car to drive. And you don't really see those things until you have extreme wind cases. You're like, oh,
yeah, Austin. Yeah.
Austin's a classic one. You know, 8, 9, 10, 11, through there, you always have huge crosswind and you have really, really extremes that you don't see at many tracks. And you're like, oh, our rear wing's absolutely shitting itself here.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that stuff, crosswinds don't typically affect the ground effect side, right? It's all the external aero, which is still kicking out.
Yeah, and it can affect everything else. Because if you start blowing, you know, some vortex under the floor and on the edge, it's supposed to be there and it's gone now. It's like, oh, that's not working. That's not good. But maybe they're less sensitive to that. But I honestly don't trust aerodynamicists. Anyway,
that is like your mortal enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus
it's usually tires versus aero, and vehicle dynamics and performance engineers are like, can you guys just turn up the grip to like 11? And they're like, no, we can't.
I could listen to this man all day, Nero.
Yeah, fine.
Well, check out the Brake F1 YouTube channel as well if you want to go on the deep
if you want to listen all day as well.
Yeah, could easily do it.
But, I mean, we've spoken obviously about some of the upgrades that some of the big dogs, the likes of Ferrari and Mercedes, are bringing to the table for Imola. But I've got an interesting question here, yeah. Where do we think Formula One is going to be looking in 5 years? Who do we think the top dogs, the top five, are going to be?
Is this, that'll be Max's last year, right? That's what he's saying, end of 28.
What, as in sack it off or the end of his contract?
Yeah, end of 28. I think he's thinking about sack, because he started so early as well.
Yeah, he started early, man.
Well, so you've got Red Bull.
The top five right now is, your Red Bull.
Red Bull, Ford. So we've got to look at these teams and what they're going to be in the future, right? Red Bull, Ford, Mercedes.
Mercedes.
Ferrari. Aston Martin, Honda, maybe?
Question mark.
Yeah, potentially.
That sounds like it's getting serious. It's past rumor.
I'm not sure what Fernando thinks about that. Oh, he's just escaped to McLaren. And then Honda jumping back in.
Yeah. Oh, they've got some blood. Some bad blood there.
Yeah.
GP2 engine.
You've got Audi.
He might have dipped, to be fair, by then. It depends when it's coming.
No, come
actually,
on.
No, he'll be there until he's like 50.
He would have infused with AI.
Yeah, exactly.
AI Alonso.
Alonso GPT.
GPT.
GPT engine. Yo, that's crazy.
We've got Audi. So Sauber becoming Audi.
Yeah, of course.
Haas. What do you reckon Haas will be by then? I don't think they'll be a little independent anymore. I think someone would have chucked
money. Someone's going to be like, right.
In 5 years' time.
Manufacturer. Yeah. We're going to have that.
Do you reckon we'll have Andretti by then? Andretti, what was it? Cadillac.
Andretti Cadillac. Yeah, they did.
Oh, certainly. So, man. If we're still talking about Andretti maybe joining F1.
Let's say yes for this.
Yeah, we'll say Andretti there. We'll say there.
And then Williams. Will they still be Williams then? I'll be surprised if Williams is still Williams.
There'll be something Williams. Williams will still be in the name, but it'll probably be like
Porsche. It could do something like Sauber. It's like, it's still Sauber, but it's Alfa Romeo.
True. And then Honda probably will have bought AlphaTauri by then. I don't know. That's the most likely, I think, anyway.
See, that really throws a spanner in the works, that one.
Yeah.
Because AlphaTauri are very much.
That makes it interesting.
Mm. Yeah, because I feel like with Audi, you can sort of assume they'll be maybe getting into the top five by that point. That's probably like a safe bet with the backing that they'll have. Mm. And Sauber's like... And then again, Sauber do manage to find a way to shit the bed each and every time.
Always. And they'll still...
Unless it's BMW Sauber, that one season. But even then, they bottle the championship.
Oh, I don't know. I think that... I just can't get part... Have you seen on... I saw it on TikTok, someone dubbed the sound of a transit over the Red Bull... putting away at Monza. Diesel.
Red Bull Ford.
Diesel TDCI power. Yeah. EcoBoost, maybe.
The Fiesta.
Ford Transit Texas edition.
Yes. Yes.
My wagon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ranger. Third car.
Ranger style. Okay. So
hedge your bets.
Are there any particular names that are them?
Red Bull, slap them in.
I mean, Horner's so young as well, so he'll still be in charge. Definitely. Yeah.
I don't have any lack of faith. Max will probably still be there. At that point,
alongside
Yuki Tsunoda probably will be driving that car. I would say, yeah. I don't know.
They'll be top of the pile.
There'll be some Red Bull Junior that's still like nine right now.
Yeah,
they'll have in the car by then.
Yeah, Yuki's definitely going to still be going as well. He's just signed a contract extension.
Yeah, till when? Was it undisclosed?
Yuki will be like in Futurama, where they just got the heads in jars, like in 1,000 years time. Yuki will still be there.
Yeah.
Red Bull will just be like, you can't leave.
Building the
you
car with leave. His eyes.
You can't leave. Just plug him into the into Milton Keynes. I can't look past Red Bull, surely, Blake. Nah. Like,
in 5 years, it's got to be Ferrari's year.
Do you reckon?
Nah. I don't know. Realistically, the most...
I believed you for a second,
the most
you little fucker.
Interesting thing that I see coming is if Honda go with Aston Martin as a supplier,
yep,
and Honda absolutely nail the 26 regulations, which you're basically like big battery, smaller ICE, and then clever energy management. And that's going
to
be it.
Didn't Honda lose a few people to Red Bull powertrains, though? Because was it Yamamoto went to
I think
Red Bull powertrains, didn't they?
There's a couple, but I'm sure. I'm not sure how easy it's going to be for Red Bull powertrains to be successful out of the bat. I think they've got a lot of people from Mercedes. They've got a lot of people from a couple people from Honda. But that's a huge ask to just rock up and be like, right, let's build a new engine, lads.
But do you think there'll be a massive discrepancy between the quickest and slowest engines, I guess?
Probably not.
Because there isn't right now, I don't think.
Not at the moment,
yeah. I don't know. Yeah, there's like in terms of the spread right now, it's not that big. It's not that big.
Okay, I think Red Bull top. Red Bull Ford top.
Oh.
Then I'd love to believe in Honda, but I just don't. And I'd love to believe in Audi, but I don't believe in Sauber. And it'll still be like, well, yeah, Sauber. I'm not so sure on Sauber. I don't know.
Yeah.
We haven't even mentioned McLaren, actually, as well. No, McLaren.
It's kind of
how many sponsors they will have on the car by a den. Every single element of the car will be a Kindle. And it will just like
rotate
sponsors the whole
time. Wait, haven't BMW already done that? Have you seen BMW have done this like paint on their cars? Like they've done it on just automotive like concepts.
That.
And the whole colour of the car changes. It's like a chameleon.
Yeah, that's cold.
That will be like McLaren BMW. There you go.
McLaren BMW.
Right, so I'm going Red Bull, Ferrari, no.
Not even in the top five.
Red Bull one, I'm going Mercedes two, to be boring. I'm saying Aston Martin Honda ahead of Honda.
Oh.
And then Renault Alpine, because they're always fifth. They're just mid. So did I. there's my five.
I'm gonna go Red Bull, Mercedes, Aston, Honda, Ferrari, and
Williams.
Williams.
McLaren will be back.
McLaren will be back.
And if they're not back, they need to sell everything.
Facts.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
if you're not back,
that's actually a time limit. But
if you're not back, sell everything.
Yeah,
put it on eBay. Get rid of the factory.
Go again.
Get rid of Ron's old desk, the old show cars. Sell them to people.
It's a little.
I don't know.
Okay, I was hoping you go last.
Okay, all right.
This is going to be a treat.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen. Number one, we're going with 2028 predictions. This is going to be boring for some people, but obviously it's a bit of a change up for right now. I'm going to say Mercedes will be top.
Mercedes.
Okay. Yeah, just to clarify, Mercedes, because they'll have discovered side pods again by that point.
Ah,
so wow. At that stage, they will have a side pod here, at least half a side pod on the other side. It'll be all good. I'm going to say Red Bull in second, then Honda third, because I actually do back them in the modern era, even though they were shit for McLaren. And then Andretti Cadillac P4.
USA.
USA. and
who are the drivers?
Audi in fifth. Oh, the driver lineup. Logan Sargeant makes sense. He'll have realized that Williams are a shit. Williams are 11th, by the way, in my predictions. Actually, no, 12th. There's going to be a new mystery team.
Wait, carry on talking. There's another driver for Cadillac Andretti. I just need to find his name.
Okay.
Steve. Bob. Alan.
Billy Bob. And Zane Maloney. I'll put Zane Maloney in there
right,
as well.
So it's going to be Logan Sargeant and Stingray Rob.
Oh, yeah.
Stingray Rob.
IndyCar driver, yeah. Stingray Rob.
Hell yeah, brother.
Wait. Hang on.
Heard that and you just regressed into your Texan roots once again.
Wait, so hang on a second. That's not a nickname. That's his actual...
That's his name, yeah.
Stingray on the birth certificate. His name's Stingray Rob.
I mean, I haven't seen it to clarify, like, but that's what his name is.
Facts. Stingray Rob, you're winning the championship, bro. 2029, Stingray Rob will win the F1 Drivers' Championship.
Well, I'm looking forward to 2028. Hopefully, we're all still
if we've
here
got
making
that
content.
Many cool, like, constructors and stuff and teams, but I'm going to be gassed.
I'm here for
that'll
it.
Be unreal.
Please, 12 teams. I beg.
Yeah, please. Bring Blake. Back Caterham.
Oh. No, they were shit.
No, they were shit. No,
and their factory's ruined.
Man.
Yeah, it's great.
No, thanks.
Fair enough. Blake, mate,
thank you so much. Thank you very much for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, thanks
appreciate
for having
it.
Me. Great to see you guys as always.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure.
Again, where can everyone find you?
Everywhere at Break. Break with 3 R's. That's it. Twitter,
3 R's.
Instagram, TikTok, MySpace.
Ooh.
What are some of the other niche social websites
BBM.
That I should be using?
Ooh, are you on Be Real? Are you
being Be Real.
I don't know.
Be Real. Be Real.
Yeah, serious. YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, all that educational, analytical Formula One content, and we can geek out for hours on end. But
dialed down enough that even my soft brain,
smooth brain,
it's got to be accessible and enjoyable. Otherwise,
exactly.
It's like I'm not making content for other F1 engineers because they're still doing it and they know what they're doing.
That's why you're so good at what you do, man. And also, shout out, you were on the Sky Sports F1 podcast as well.
I was
schooling them.
It was a good chat.
Yeah, it was.
Crofty gave me a little shout out during FP2 as well.
Yeah, I thought about texting you when he said that. And I was like, nah, Twitter's already got it. Like, everyone's just like, Break's been mentioned. I loved it.
A little bit of data analysis for the fans at home.
Exactly.
Full of random.
Pleasure as always, Niren. Good
Thank
luck
you
with
very
the
much.
Rest of your move.
Yeah, man.
By
Shout
our Imola
out
stream.
Box gang.
By our Imola live stream, where you've been moved into your new gaff yet?
No. I'm moving like at the start of June. So I think literally the next 3 Grand Prix, I'm going to be pulling out of my cardboard box.
I've moved so often, I find it so stressful. So
it's a long day.
Don't forget to drop a like or subscribe or both if you're watching on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can also, if you're audio only, you can give us a 5-star Apple Podcast, Spotify. Maybe leave a comment if you can.
Yep. Yeah.
Sometimes
there's
polls on there as well.
Put in your favorite section, man. Download it. Do everything.
Engage, mate. Just engage wherever you can. And
where else can they find us, Tomo?
They can find us on HermanMiller.com. They sell really nice chairs.
Crazy.
Go for the brand deal, you know.
Yeah. Again, we've got that space just down there.
£1,500 chair. I mean, these chairs are nice, but they're not quite.
Yeah. You can also find us on Bet365 as well. If you put a 3-fold ACCA down, then it just comes up with our episode.
So. Other gambling platforms are available.
Yes. Yeah. Don't gamble as well, kids.
No.
Gamble away.
Responsibly.
When the fun stops, stop.
Stop. Exactly.
The fun never stops.
The fun never stops.
Ending on a very serious and
not serious at the same time.
Adult note. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
Peace and love.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.